We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Yo, good morning. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I appreciate you, of course, very much. I'll keep the intro short today because the episode itself is so darn good. Nat Harrington, Nat's Nuts, and his friend Ty, I shouldn't say his friend Ty, his coworker, his partner Ty, is here today. We'll talk to him quite a bit, but I just wanted to come on, pop on, as one does, and say hello. And certainly hope that you've been having a good one. I've been getting a couple weeks ahead on these podcasts, not necessarily on purpose, just been a lot of opportunities to record good ones. And as a result, I've gotten ahead, which means that my little intros here aren't quite as current, which I don't love. So I did want to let you know that I've got I do have a monologue coming up. I'll try to make that a lot more current, probably weekend of Labor Day. Sunday, August 31st, and I do have also my friend Tom Seymour coming on next week. He's got a brand new bar coming out called Mocha, but you'll hear more about that next week. But a quick note about that 2 weeks from today, that August 31st date, that was a big date for me. That was circled on my calendar. August 31st was the day I was going to see Bone Thugs and Harmony at Darien Lake. Oh, you don't follow Bone Thugs and Harmony news, do you? No? Okay. Did you listen to my podcast from a month ago or so when I did my whole intro about them being a little crazy with their ticket prices? Well, guess who's not crazy? Me. Because they have now canceled a majority of that tour, including the show in Buffalo at Darien Lake. So Bone Thugs and Harmony was exactly what I said they were. Crazy thinking they were going to get the prices they were trying to charge. And I got the email notification. I was very disappointed a week ago saying, oh, it's canceled. Here's your money. Oh, by the way, it didn't even say here's your money back. It said the promoter has 14 to 21 days to return the money for this concert, at which point we'll return your money. You better hope so, Ticketmaster. I hope you're insured. That promoter. I don't know who you're trusting. I trust you've got solid clawed contracts. Anyway, not a shocker to find out they canceled Bone, to be honest with you, over the years, and I am a huge fan, as you know, but they have been pretty famous for canceling tours and concerts. It is not unheard of to have no shows and cancellations. I mean, getting five adults on the same page is always going to be tough, no matter what. So I get it, but that being said, it's just, I should have known when I bought the ticket. So I'm disappointed. That was going to be a big night. I was really excited for that show, but not to be, I suppose. No Bone Thug show. So anyway, all right. Well, thank you for being here. Let's get to the good part. My man, Nat Harrington, Nat's Nuts. Enjoy. I don't know how it's possible it's been this long, that we've known each other for so long. We've been in each other's orbits for a long time. Yep. I have definitely formally asked you to do this podcast several times.
You have. I've formally requested multiple times.
But we've just somehow hold the mic up even for, that's perfect right there. Yeah. It is great to see you, Mr. Harrington.
Thank you.
I mean, everywhere you go, was the first question, first of all, always, is it Nat or Nate? Is that the first question?
It's usually not a question. It's usually assumed Nate, and then it's a correction.
Yeah.
So it's, I get Nate all the time.
What's on your birth certificate?
Nathaniel.
Nathaniel.
Yep, I-E-L.
And did you just always go by Nat?
My brother, so I have a twin brother, and growing up, he, I guess, couldn't say my name or just decided that I was going to be Nat instead of Nate. So it's been Nat since I was a little kid. There was a weird phase in middle school where I was nervous to correct people. So I was Nate for 1 year. but since then I've been Nat.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. We have a lot of, we're very self-conscious in middle school, right? Oh, like you're afraid to say anything.
Yeah. I didn't know who I was. I was, my identity was ambiguous. Yes. So I was
Where'd Nate you grow up?
Grew up in Oswego.
Okay. Yep. All right. Fantastic. And like, what did mom and dad do?
So dad owned a landscaping business, and my mom, growing up, she had fibromyalgia, so she didn't work. Okay. She would help him with like books and things like that occasionally. But yeah, I learned my entrepreneurial spirit from my dad, seeing what it was like to, he could take off whenever he wanted to. We could go camping whenever we wanted to.
Yeah. Did you see the stress side of it too, though, through him, or did he shield you from that?
He shielded that pretty well. My dad's an interesting character. We'll get very personal, but he struggled with drug addiction for most of his life. So a very volatile guy, but so I learned a lot of what to do as far as like hard work and being efficient. And I also learned a lot of what not to do.
That's
from
important.
Treating your employees and, being addicted to drugs for lack of a better word.
That's on the don't side.
Don't do that one. But yeah, I learned so much from him.
Oh, that's I'm sorry. That's really hard.
Thank you.
That's
Thank
hard.
You. Yeah,
were you privy to it your whole childhood? Like, did you know that's what's going on? Or did he just act erratically and you didn't know why until later?
We found out when we went. So when my brother and I were 10, my sister was 12. And he was in and out of rehab through like middle school, high school years. Yeah, something that as a 10-year-old you don't really know what that means. You're like, okay, he has a drug addiction. But you feel the effects of it. Like going into rehab and seeing him was a very just weird thing to experience.
I get it.
And it's you're different than the other kids, so that was it definitely made me self-conscious and kind of put me into a shell.
Yeah.
But
the it's quite a leap to make here. But the news that you shared with me, is that able to be shared?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So you are now an expecting father.
I am.
Right.
I am.
In November. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, this you is public knowledge, so it's on Facebook, so everybody knows that.
you and your wife, Giselle, right?
Yep.
Have a baby coming, and do you look at and you just go like, this is like same thing as entrepreneurism, also being a father, you're like, I know what to do. I know.
Yeah, there was so much carryover. I mean, my dad really was, when he was good, he was great.
Mm-hmm.
So like wrestling with us and at all of our sporting events. Whether he was creating a scene, yelling at the refs or not was, beside the point. But he was there cheering us on, which is what I take away from that.
Is he still around?
He's still around.
Okay.
Yep. Lives in Oswego.
Okay.
So all of my family is over in Oswego still.
All right. So if I came to you when you were in like a senior in high school and I said, well, hey, Nat, what are you going to be when you grow up? What was the answer?
So my senior year, I was going to Roberts Wesleyan College, intending on going to Roberts Wesleyan for an engineering program. So I was going specifically for physics, and I thought, I'll be a mechanical engineer. I love fixing things. I love solving problems. I like math and physics. And obviously, I am not a mechanical engineer. You can see that. So my freshman year of college, I took Calc 1. It went well. Took Calc 2 the following semester, and it just kicked the crap out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, maybe I'm not cut out for engineering. So I ended up switching to business, and here we are today.
Didn't you like start the business at Roberts in your dorm? Aren't you one of those dorm room?
Yeah. So we're a dorm room success.
Yeah.
It was my junior year of college, and I was going to Guatemala with the business club at Roberts, to do this mission trip, supporting young mothers and orphans, opening up a coffee shop.
That's the other thing we got to get to, is how good of an actual person you are.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, knowing a little bit about what I do know about you personally is you're also secretly like just an angel. Like, but all right, we'll come back to that. So you just decided to go to Guatemala to help people.
Yeah. So there's
there's
this cool opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And I had to fundraise $3,000 for this mission trip to support both my trip there and then support the actual coffee roastery we were starting. And it was around November that I started this fundraising, and I didn't really know how to fundraise. So I was like, it's kind of awkward to just ask people from school and for church for money. Mm-hmm. Like, that seems like an awkward ask. Generally, there's a transaction.
Yeah.
Which since then I've learned that like, no, they're partnering with you in supporting you, but that's beside the point. So I felt awkward about just asking for money, and the idea of Nat's Nuts popped into my head. A year prior to this, a friend and I were talking about the Oswego Farmers Market, and I just made the off comment, oh, no one sells cinnamon roasted nuts there. I really like those.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, you've got a great name for it. You should start one and call it Nat's Nuts, just as a joke. And we're like, oh, haha, Nat's Nuts. That's funny. Yeah, that idea popped back into my head.
That everybody knows that smell of walking through a farmer's market, right? Or a festival, like, or whatever. And the roasted nuts are just, it always catch. There's not a single person that walks by that doesn't go, oh.
Yeah, and now everyone walks into our warehouse. Have you been to our warehouse yet?
No, not the new one, okay. No.
As soon as you walk in, you'll say, it smells great in there. It's like a knee-jerk reaction that people have stepping foot in there 100% of the time. But yeah, so the idea popped into my head, and I was like, well, I'll see how much a nut roaster costs. So I went on Google, and the first one I found was $6,000.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, that's that's not feasible. And like any good college kid, I went to eBay, and I found a little handheld stovetop roaster for $20. And I was like, I can make a $20 investment. So I bought my first roaster and did my first roast in my mom's kitchen, and then brought the whole operation with me to Roberts. So my senior year, my room... my actual dedicated room was the Nat's Nuts headquarters. So it was, I had a single. Cool. So I had boxes and I had nut storage and sugar and all the bags and stuff. And then I actually lived, Ty is sitting right next to me. I lived under Ty's bed, like like Harry Potter under the closet. Like it was fun.
Wow. A dorm room business. Legitimately run. So people would knock on your door and say, can I get a bag of nuts?
Yep.
Like,
I was the nut guy. So as soon as I started the business, I became the nut guy. And people would knock, and yeah, so initially the fundraiser went very well. So I would, I'd set a certain price for nuts, and people obviously would donate additionally. But I was like, man, this was a great way to make money. And then it evolved into the public market and the wholesale. And we can talk about that if you want.
Have to figure out, like, you're roasting these nuts, and the one thing about the festivals and the farmers markets is they do it right in front of you and then they give it to you, right?
Yep.
Did you have to figure out, how am I going to make sure this still tastes good in 2 days, 3 days, like shelf life? The food, is there food science involved?
Yeah. So there's a drying process. Okay. The way we specifically make nuts, we're not going to that really hard sugar consistency where it is crystallizing and then like a hard cracking consistency for sugar. So it's technically not a candied nut. So what we realized was, maybe an hour after we roast them, they're almost like a soft consistency because they're still cooling down. But if you give them 12 hours, they've reached a nice point where they're crispy and roasted properly. So that is what we do. We'd prep during the week for the market. We let everything roast, cool down, get crispy, and then bag it up and bring it to the market. They were good for a while.
Wow. So did that take some trial and error? Was that pretty quick?
I think it was pretty quick. It was kind of a natural. Just
what about legal jumping through hoops? I mean, I know there's some things you can make at home. There's things you can't.
Yep.
I've never been allowed to make sauce at home.
Yep.
Don't worry. In the first couple months of the business,
we won't. Yeah. I don't know. New York City, if you're listening, turn your mics off.
I think, what year are we talking about with you?
So this is 2015, December 2015.
Oh, we're great. Yep. Statute of limitations, 7 years on this kind of stuff. Yeah, my first couple
in
months
that case.
Was, my first sale, I've talked about it publicly a few times. My first sale was definitely made at home. It was definitely out of the trunk of my car.
Awesome.
You know, like, I mean, is that, dealer. When you're in the dorm room, are you technically under the radar, or is this?
No, so we, from the get-go, we were above board and doing things legally, which fortunately, the nuts that we were using, because they were commercially roasted when we had originally bought them, we were able to use the New York State home processor exemption.
Nice.
So if we had used raw nuts, that falls under the category of hazardous foods, so they wouldn't let us do it. But we were good to go from the get-go.
Oh, my God. Yeah, what a blessing that was, too, that it just kind of, it's your specialty, but it also happens to have an easier path to market, right?
Yeah, there are so many different things that along the way I look back on, and I'm like, man, God opened up so many different doors for this business to be successful in what it is now.
Mm-hmm. What about, like, so college is about to be done. I mean, at this point, when you're running this out of your dorm room, is this what you're going to do after college? Or are you still thinking, I got to go get a job? I got to, like, when do you go, you know what? I might actually just go do this.
Yeah. So it was, it wasn't really my choice to begin with. So my senior year, I had an internship with an IT company doing marketing for them. And over that final semester, I worked myself out of a job. I was very efficient and did all the projects that they asked me to do.
You fixed everything.
I did. And they were like, so Matt, if you're listening to this, sorry. But yeah, all the projects they gave me, I figured out quickly how to solve them. They had nothing for me once the semester was over. So a couple days before graduation, they were like, yeah, you know, we appreciate all the work you've done. You've done a great job this internship, but unfortunately we can't move forward. Mm. And that, you know, no hard feelings. And so I had, from the previous summer, I had done the Fairport Public, the Rochester Public Market, and a couple of miscellaneous festivals. And I was like, well, like Nat's Nuts is established. I have, you know, my rent is very cheap. I'm, again, living with Ty and just...
Ty, we're going to get to you in a minute.
Yeah, Ty, I'm very excited to hear Ty's side of these things. And I was like, you know what? I'll just go full time with Nat's Nuts. Like, I'll see what I can grow this thing into over the summer. And then if I have to get a real job, I'll get a real job. Yeah. So we went from doing just the public market to doing the Avon Flea Market, the Brighton Farmers Market, like all these different farmers markets, Irondequoit. So I think we had 6 or 7 markets that we would do throughout the week. I would hire Ty occasionally to do them, hire friends to do them. That was under the table. So mm-hmm. New York State again. Tune out. But yeah, so that first summer I grew the business and I was like, wow, this is really like, this could be a summer thing. This is awesome. And then once the festival season kind of slows down and people aren't going out and buying and trying samples, I was like, all right, now I have to get a real job. So that cycle continued for a handful of years after graduation. It was from, you know, November to May, I'd find a job either working retail or working marketing or doing something in sales. And then during the summer, I would quit the job and go full-time nuts.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God, what a great story.
It was fun.
Do you think back to those times of lugging that 10x10 tent around and boxes of nuts? Yeah, do you? I mean, there's something about it that's romantic, though, right? About setting up when it's not even light out yet. Yeah. And you know, it sucked at the time, right? I mean, we put a smile on for the entire 8 hours or however long those markets were. Like, we smiled. We talked to everybody. That's the job, though. But there's times also where you're standing, your back's starting to hurt. You're like, what do I got tomorrow? Oh, another market. Yep. Oh, another market.
Yeah,
oh,
and
another
it just market. Keeps going. Like, at the start of the summer, once you hit June and you've done a month of markets and festivals every day for a month, it's, you know. And you have a long summer ahead of you.
What's hardest about it is, too, people are coming up and they're meeting Nat. They're meeting you. Mm-hmm. They want to meet you so bad. You're Nat. Nat's nuts, right?
And
they
people are always surprised. They're like, this young kid is running this business. Like, this is cool.
But. Yeah, but you have to treat every one of those interactions like it's the first one you're having. Yep. You are excited to be. You haven't been there since 5:30 in the morning. You just got here. You're full of energy. Yep. You're excited. Like, every single interaction has to be, you're a 10 out of 10. I mean, you are a charming person to begin with, but like, thanks. That's got to be exhausting for anybody, right? Would you go home then at night and be like, mentally exhausted?
Don't talk to me. No, I'm an extrovert through and through.
Okay. All right. Great.
And I have a very positive disposition in general. So as long as I would have a good night of sleep beforehand.
That wasn't hard. Like five hours into talking wasn't hard for you?
No, I loved it. So it just
I can't.
Gave me more and more energy throughout the day.
Yeah, you're not human, dude.
I will say, when I used to drive out to the Syracuse market from Rochester, it would be, I think on Saturdays or Sundays, I would leave my house at 3:30 and get there, set up, work until like 3 p.m. And that was a long day. So the drive home was the sweet, sweet reprieve. But then I got home and I was ready to hang out with Ty and play FIFA or something.
All right, so you're making the nuts and you're selling them in markets, or you're selling them at markets, but when do you start getting into some stores? When do you start, hey, let's bag these things and put them, let's go wholesale.
Yeah.
I assume you're just going kind of door to door for a little while. Like, would you please carry the nuts? Like, how's that stage go?
Yeah. So that stage was a very organic, process. So back in 2018, Fuego Coffee reached out to us and they said, hey, we would love to wholesale your nuts. They're the first ones to reach out. Mm-hmm. And they were actually the people that I went to Guatemala with. So I knew Tony and Renee, the owners, very well. And I was like, yeah, I would love to do business with you guys. But a part of me was like, oh, but then I'm almost competing with myself because people know where to buy the nuts.
Yeah.
But if I'm selling them to this other place in Rochester, then maybe they'll buy fewer at the market. It'll affect my margins. And I didn't realize I should be competing with myself. Like, I should have as many places that sell them as possible. Yeah. They're the first ones to approach me. And at this point, we're still in a clear cellophane bag. We don't have any marketing on our bag other than just the ingredients. And it was just a very rudimentary wholesale account. The following year we got maybe 20 or 30 accounts, and I was like, okay, this is a cool way to make money. It seems like a passive way to do it. And we started doing more and more manufacturing. 2020 hits, everybody knows what happens. And stores, I'm not sure what your experience was, but every store that we reached out to is like, yeah, we want anything that will go on our shelves to sell. People are buying everything. Mm-hmm. So send us everything. So the end of 2020, we had 70 wholesale accounts.
Can we talk a little bit about like March, April 2020?
Yeah, let's do it.
That was... It feels unfair.
We want to remind everybody.
I know. There were I've had to do this a few times. Anyone listens to the podcast knows. Let's separate professional from personal. Personal, I understand it was devastating, right?
Yeah.
Professionally, it was not a bad time to be making shelf-stable pantry items.
Not at all.
And the calls you're talking about, yes, everybody wanted everything we had. I think at the time, I was using a co-packer. I was using Private Label Foods on Lyle Avenue. I had maybe 800 cases of everything.
Okay.
And my Wegmans buyer, who's still my buyer to this day, called me and said, what do you got? And I was honest with him. I said, 797 Italian sausage and 650 Rosa. And he just goes, great. Can you send it all? And on the one hand, you're going, oh my God, that's amazing. Well, this is the biggest order I've ever received.
Right.
But on the other hand, I'm going like, he's going to clean me out of inventory.
What
my co-packer, probably it's COVID. So my co-packer is going to tell me they can't make me more sauce for 6 months.
Yep.
And every mom and pop that calls me, I'm going to have to tell no for months because Wegmans bought it all, you know? So I called him back after like a day of talking to a couple mentors. I called him back and kind of talked through, can I keep like 10% of it? For the month, and he was great. He was like, of course, yes, keep 10% of it, you know, and I'll give you 90% of it. I just needed it for the mom and pops, you know. But I mean, so your experience was similar. It was just like, take it.
Yeah, it was very similar. And we were much smaller than you were at that point, as far as, you know, we're not talking to Wegmans or any big buyers. These are just very small mom and pop shops. So for us, even to have 70 wholesale accounts by the end of the year, as soon as someone places an order, we're ready to fulfill it the next day. And we were procuring nuts and sugar and all that stuff from Costco at the time.
Okay.
So right, and they had no shortages of products. We were like, all right, we'll be good to go. We can say
Costco's, man.
Holy
cow,
Costco was.
Are you in Costco today?
We're not. No.
Oh, you're gonna be soon.
Yeah.
I think you're gonna be soon.
That's the goal.
That's some freaking volume, bro.
Yeah.
Those guys. Holy cow. The 70 stores, though. I just want to reiterate: the 70 stores is you, personally. Driving around, walking in, and giving a spiel,
And
some nuts.
So I realized too, you know, I can just call people. Like I don't have to actually walk and show up in stores.
Oh, you're so much smarter than me.
Oh. I was like, I can use technology to my advantage here.
Yeah.
So I would call. I would, you know, look up on Google like different co-ops or delis or things like that. Things that would be conducive to selling the nuts. And I would just find the buyer. I'd say, hey, you know, this is Nat from Nat's Nuts. You know, I own a gourmet nut roasted line. Like I'd love to send you guys some samples of our product. Who do I talk to?
Mm-hmm.
And they're, of course they want to put me in charge with or in touch with the right person. So they would field the call. I'd reintroduce myself and say, I just want to send you some free samples. And that's a hard thing to say no to.
Oh yeah.
So I really turned what I did at the market and took that and said, okay, how can I make that my wholesale strategy as well?
Yeah.
So that's still what we do to this day is our sales guy finds stores, he calls them. He says, can I send you a free sample? And then follows up and we get new business that way.
It's a lot. I mean, it was a lot of legwork, but again, you were way smarter than me making the phone calls ahead of time. But talk about a little bit about the idea of like disrupting a category. I mean, was there a category or did you create like a subset too? Because you could buy nuts at the store, right?
Yeah.
But was anybody selling those like farmers market type roasted nuts?
You had the occasional brand that would do it. Really any nut with like a specialty sugar or a sweet flavor on it, they didn't really exist much. You could find them online.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a specialty shop or a specialty roaster that makes them. You could find them that way. But generally no one was doing wholesale, and especially no one was doing wholesale like a cinnamon whiskey pecan or a vanilla rum cashew. No one was selling anything like that.
Yeah. So what you're doing is better than disrupting a category. You're creating a category.
Yeah, this is a brand new thing.
Yeah. It's ironic that you're sitting in the chair you're sitting in because my business partner is this guy named Tom Riggio, and every Tuesday morning, he and you and I are recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, but every Tuesday morning, he and I sit at this table, and he sits in that seat, and his stomping ground is he was from Vitamin Water. He was an early Vitamin Water
guy.
No
kidding.
And they were sort of like you in that they were not Gatorade and they were not water. Mm-hmm. They were something in the middle. They were a new category within a category. Mm-hmm. Like snacks, nuts, those things obviously existed, but like... Yep. I just think it's so, I'm just so like happy for you and mad at you at the same time because
see,
like,
that's another one of the things that I'm like, I'm telling you, man, like God opened all these doors. Like it's a shelf stable product.
Yeah.
It's totally unique. And it's, yeah.
The shelf, isn't the shelf life great? You and I are in the same boat on that.
You've got a 1 year shelf life. It's
dude, we in Sauce, we got 2 years. I got friends and I know you got friends too, who've got like 10 day shelf lives. I'm like, how do you even, oh my God.
Like, how do you keep track of
and
that?
And then there's the other end too. Speaking of Tom, he's partner at Iron Smoke. At Iron Smoke, make it now, they can't sell it for 2 years because it's bourbon.
Yeah.
So like, how do you manage that?
Yeah, I mean, you guys seeing your production line, knowing that you have, you're from the kettle,
yeah,
filling the jars, sealing the jars, labeling the jars, cooling the jars, and then it's in a case in a matter of what, 20 minutes maybe?
Yeah. It's pretty
that
cool.
That is incredible.
It's pretty cool,
that
right?
Really cool.
Yeah. But anyway, I bring up Tom because the idea of like this, you're a category within a category, you're a new category, really. I think it's really great. And I think that it just shows the sky's the limit. And the reason I say I'm so happy for you, because that's the mother load. I mean, that's the promised land, right? The reason I say I'm mad at you is because there's only two types of people I know. There's the people like me who do pasta sauce, which the advantage to the disadvantage, let's just say, get it out, because it's an easy disadvantage. Everybody knows there are a billion pasta sauces, right? So that's the disadvantage.
Yep.
The advantage to pasta sauce was that there is zero education of the consumer. Mm. Everybody knows how to use a jar of pasta sauce.
Yeah.
So why I bring that up is because I've got some clients here even, or just friends who have started products that are very unique. And, you know, a lot of their selling point is like, well, there's nothing like it. Okay, there's nothing like it.
But then you have to educate people on
it. But people don't know what it is. They look at it and they what do you mean? You know, I don't know. Whatever it says on it, they're going, what, I don't understand. How do I use it? Do I put it over rice? There's just a million different questions that people have. And then these people end up finding out that they have to demo constantly, because people will just pass it up because they don't want to think for more than 2 to 3 seconds on what is this and what do I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
It has to like just be obvious.
Yeah.
You did both.
We happened to figure that out. And I will say there was some intentionality behind that with the name. Like we want people to know instantly what it is, but the packaging design, so my wife Giselle is the one who designed all of her packages. And she, you know, created this bold typeface justified font where it just says the first thing you're going to read, which you read it in half a second, is cinnamon whiskey pecan. You know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
You don't know what it tastes like yet because you haven't had it, but once you have it, then you're like, okay, this is really a cool thing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Okay, so this is we're in like late 2020 on the story right now, right? So we've got 4 years to cover here.
Yep.
A little while ago before we started recording, don't forget to hold the mic up.
Oh, yep.
A little while ago before we started recording, you were telling me you're in 3,500 stores.
We are.
So let's talk about the last 4 years and some of those leaps you've seen. Like, what
have
are
been crazy.
What are a couple of the just moments from the last 4 years where you went from like this level to that level almost overnight? And I know overnight's not fair because you're sitting here 10 years later going, it's not overnight. But
some things, I mean, there's acceleration in certain buying categories.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two things that I would say really have been like big markers for us in jumping in revenue and total accounts. We getting good sounds.
No, you're good. Yeah, I'm just cool. Every once in a while I gotta check this thing, make sure it's still recording.
when did you buy this Zoom?
This thing's old. This thing is like 2014, 15, something like
but
that.
But it's still getting the job done.
Still
you're
going.
Still, you're keeping up with the young guys.
I'm just waiting until I keep recording these things. I'm just waiting until the person I have to call back and go, it broke.
We gotta re-record.
Didn't record. It's happened
twice.
Pretend
to be authentic.
Twice, by the way, where something went wrong and I couldn't use the podcast. I did the guy from Lincoln Hill Farms. I sat there for an hour and had a great conversation with him. And then I like accidentally erased the data and then I couldn't recover it. Oh, it was the worst.
That is the worst.
And then one time I was interviewing the guy from the convention center back when I was still on the radio for CEOs You Should Know. And computer, it's I'm talking to him and I can see the computer screen. It's in front of me. He can't see it. The whole computer just crashes as we're talking. And so I just like, he
Did
just
you
kept talking.
A bead of sweat starts dripping
down
your head.
Yes, I'm just panicking. I'm trying not to show him I'm panicking. Anyway, I'm sorry for distracting.
No,
if you see me lean over and look at this thing once in a while,
I'll just keep rocking.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm easily distracted. Yeah. so
All right. So the big moments to go from 70 to 3,500.
So the two big moments would be when we started selling our products online, wholesale, doing a wholesale portal. And then the second would be when we hired an actual sales guy. Mm-hmm. So the first one, it's, you know, in 2020, we finished the year with 70 wholesale accounts. 2021, we finished the year with 700 wholesale accounts.
Huge.
So that is our first big jump right there.
You attribute
there.
That one to the mostly the online?
100%. Yeah.
So you're saying wholesale online. So I own a store in California.
Yep.
And I can order from you. I want to buy two cases.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So what we did, one of our wholesale accounts reached out and said, hey, there's this portal that I buy product on. It's called Fare, FARRE.com. You should put your product on there. And at first I was apprehensive. I was like, you know, that kind of seems, I don't know, why would I do that? Like, it seems like a waste of time
shipping
to put my whole
product.
Like, are people going to want to pay for shipping? Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, if there are all these risks, which they're not really risks. They're just kind of small walls that I have to get over. Like, I have to figure out shipping and all this stuff. But at that point, we had a certified commercial kitchen. So now we don't have our home processor exemption. We're not making the nuts in our house anymore. So we can legally ship outside of New York State. So I was like, you know what? Let's give it a shot. We'll list our products on fair.com and see how they do. And that's what, you know, I think 400 or 500 of those new accounts came from Fair that year.
Awesome.
And the rest, it was me just going full time as an employee for Nat's Nuts and really scaling my sales efforts.
Was the sales on Fair, was that mostly organic or were there like you were doing promotion?
Yeah, this
on
is
there,
fully
or?
Organic.
Wow.
Yeah. So
awesome.
People would just see, and again, this is, you know, as soon as you see the bag, you know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So a store doesn't have to think much or really figure out what am I buying here. They know exactly what they're getting very quickly.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible. The second thing then is hiring a sales guy too, right?
Yeah. So, and this is a serendipitous thing. So our sales guy, his name's Eric. And when Ty and I graduated college, we lived in, it was actually a converted pig sty to like, you know, to be a dwelling place. So the ceilings were like maybe 6'2". So like you're crawling around in there. And this was just a, you know, an apartment of one of our professors that we knew. So it was Ty, his brother, Kenny, and I all sharing that. And our neighbor was this guy, Eric, who coincidentally worked for a company called Healthy You, and they sold cinnamon roasted nuts. So their shtick was they'd go around to different convenience stores, set up a little booth for them, set up a little display, and they would refill the display with things like bananas, apples, chips. And then they had a company in Michigan that sold them cinnamon roasted like cashews and almonds. And so I approached Eric. As soon as I found that out, I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, I'm, you know, your supplier is right next door. There's going to be no shipping cost for you guys. This is a no-brainer. So I came up to him and said, hey, you know, here's our product. I gave him some samples. He took it back to the boss. And our margins just weren't what they were looking for at that time because our volume was so much smaller. And so Eric was, he was like, sorry, you know, I'd love to work with you, but I can't do it. And then fast forward 2.5 years, and Eric runs into me at homecoming at Roberts Wesleyan. We both were all alum at Roberts. And he said, hey, like, you know, he saw us in the new, with the new bag. He was like, this looks really good. I'd love to see if we can sell this. So he took it back to the owner and they said, no, there's alcohol in this product. So I don't want to sell it, which was an interesting thing for us. We're like, okay, like, you know, whatever personal conviction you have. Sure. We understand. So Eric came back and said that, and then
isn't
he said,
it like trace amounts though? I mean, it's gotta be so little.
There's no alcohol in the actual product. Okay, it's all cooked out. So like if you're sober or, you know, have anything that you can't, if you're allergic to alcohol, for whatever reason, you can still have the product. But because we used alcohol, he was like, I don't want to sell it. More power to you.
Yeah.
But Eric said, you know, I'm doing these runs where I go to these stores, and I think these stores would still want them. So I would love to be an independent sales contractor for you. And I was like, great. That's perfect. Like,
awesome.
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So Eric quickly went from having zero wholesale accounts to 200 wholesale accounts. And I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's killing it.
He's crushing it. Yeah.
And then January of last year, December of last year, 2 years ago, that company that Eric was working for, started to go out of business, and Eric approached me and said, hey, like I would love to sell nuts full time. And that's what he does now. So for the
past
almost 2 years, he's been.
So is the 3,500 a lot of independents? Are there a couple chains in there? Like
there are a handful of small chains sprinkled in. So we work with Whole Foods in like Rochester, Buffalo, and Albany area.
Yeah.
We work with a couple the fresh markets.
But so none of those are just like 200 or 300 chain?
No, those are all like mom and pop
shops.
That's
incredible, dude.
Yeah,
that's a lot. I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's really cool.
Are you steering clear of the chains, or it just hasn't gotten there yet?
Yeah,
or
we just haven't gotten there. We really haven't put too much effort into.
Do you want to be in Wegmans? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, that's the goal.
What are we waiting for? Let's go do it. Like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we just haven't really taken the time to do that. But now that we do have the food safety certifications, we're able to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll talk off the air more about.
Oh, I would think you'd be a shoo-in at Wegmans. I can't, you know, I mean, it's not my shelf space to give away, but I would think that's gotta be, you're a hometown guy and the product is that successful. Just by the way, it is available at Redbird Market. I feel like I have to say
that. We love those guys. They sell a lot of nuts.
yeah.
Hello, folks. My name is Magnus. I am a host of The Mind of Magnus. It's a podcast where I focus on expanding my brain and bringing some awesome people along the way to help expand your brain. So I have some new seasons and some awesome new guests coming up this year. So join me. Send me some factoids if you have your own. I even have a call-in line. So check it out. Find me at mindofmagnus.com, wherever you get your Lunch and Door podcast network, which is everywhere.
Hello, Rochester. This is Richard B. Cologne.
And Quanti Donnell.
We are the curators of the Behind the Glass Gallery, where we host monthly receptions on First Friday, showcasing three underrepresented artists from the Rochester area.
And on this podcast network, you can listen to us speak to these monthly artists to get another lens on their medium and how they contribute amazing things to the Rochester arts community.
Catch us at 240 East Main Street every First Friday and
on the Lunch and Door Podcast Network.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible growth. And then just to talk about the actual facility, you were in Fairport for a long time. Were you like above Amazing Grains or like where were you? Right above Amazing Grains?
Yep. Yeah. So we were in the industrial park over there. We were their ceiling neighbor for a little bit. We had 500 square feet. And then we moved next door to them. We had 2000 square feet.
And now you've since moved downtown, right?
Not quite downtown, but it's, kind of Grace and Gates convergence. So Lexington Ave.
Got it.
And we have 7,000 square feet now, so it's grown into a huge operation.
And you're becoming a manufacturer. I mean, you've always made your own nuts, right?
Yep.
But you're going from like we make our own product to like we are manufacturers.
Exactly.
That's been the last couple of years. You've been kind of doing that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So we're realizing, you know, we have this equipment to make this really good product. We might as well run the equipment as much as we can.
Yes.
So Ty and I, our goal is to really build our contract manufacturing and private label business.
Yes.
So that equipment is running.
Yes. Yeah. I know you're just starting to dabble. How do you like? I mean, that's my business. I love that business. I love co-packing and private labeling. Yeah. Like, how are you liking that so far?
It's so new that it's hard to say.
Yeah.
And we've worked with only maybe three or four companies that we've done this for. We're doing something with Blue Line Coffee.
Cool.
It's, you know, they're based out of the Adirondacks. So they're doing like a maple almond. We have a guy, Scottish Shortbread, based in Rochester here.
Oh, I know that guy. Yeah.
Awesome guy. So he does like a Lagavulin pecan, which fits perfectly with what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But it is such a unique, different product than the cinnamon whiskey pecan. And right now we're trying to figure out like a salt brine almond that for a company in New York City, which is challenging because we've never done anything like that.
Yeah.
So that's brand new, but it's fun and exciting and, you know, it's a lot of problem solving, which I love.
Yeah, it's a ton of problem solving. Yeah, absolutely. It's you think you got it down, and then somebody's just got this little twist where you're going like, well, how would we get that
in
there?
This isn't quite right.
Yeah,
exactly. So right now, just to get very like science specific with the nuts. So these salt brined almonds, they go into a hot bath of water and they blanch, which means the skin starts to come off the almond. And this guy's almonds, he was using Costco Kirkland almonds. And the skin is more fragile, so it would blanch easier, and the end content would have more salt. So it's a saltier product.
Mm-hmm.
And then our nuts are either fresher or the skin is thicker. We're not sure exactly. We're trying to figure out what, like scientifically, is going on here. But the skin isn't coming off as much, and therefore it's not as salty of a product.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, one of the problems that we're facing and trying to figure out, but... Once we figured it out, great.
Well, you mentioned at one point that you were getting nuts back in the day from Costco. Have you moved to bigger suppliers? And like,
yeah.
So what you're saying exactly. Like, it's got to have something. You're right. You're down the right road. And I know nothing about nuts, so I can't lend any advice. But what I can tell you is that Cornell is fantastic for this. Food Venture Center. I don't know what kind of contact you have with them, but you can get somebody on the phone who will at least look into it for you.
Yeah.
They're great about food science advice. Just phenomenal with it, and just the smallest thing, like it's more fresh, it's less processed, it's got more salt, can change everything.
Yeah, whether it's steam pasteurized or a different pasteurization method, there are so many different things that can affect that. But yeah, we just I think now have a contact with Cornell doing food safety stuff. So we can lean into that. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was this thing called vertical integration. So in talking about buying nuts,
Google what that means. Hold on, go on.
So vertical integration, in essence, is a business that that pretty much does everything for themselves. So like for us as the brand, a lot of food brands will hire a contract manufacturer, and they, you know, that's what you do. You make the sauce for Wegmans, or you make the sauce for whoever you're making sauce for. So the brand isn't actually in charge of the product. You're in charge of the product. So for us, something that makes Nat's Nuts unique is that we are actual the manufacturers as well. So we are literally roasting the nuts, we're packaging the nuts, and we're shipping the nuts. So we're doing everything in-house. And something that adds to that vertical integration is our goal is to work with suppliers who do that as well. So our almond farmer, we work with a specific almond farm based in California.
That is so cool.
So it's not like this big buying conglomerate where your almonds are coming from all over California or all over Spain or anything like that. It is, you can pinpoint the exact trees that these almonds were grown on.
That's
which
incredible.
Is so cool.
Stuart, do you have that info like on your website or anything like that?
We're working on building a new website.
I don't know. You know your business better than I do, but to me, I feel like that's great information.
It's so cool. And it's something I just sent out. So I send out a monthly, I call it a nut letter.
The nut letter,
a newsletter. and I go into like the nerdy stuff about nuts and fun stories. But vertical integration is something I highlighted, I think, 2 months ago. So it's something we're realizing, this is really a unique thing that we do, and people appreciate it. They like knowing that this specific product came from this area.
Yeah. You have your eyeballs on that nut from California all the way to their store shelf.
Yep. And those the almond, generally the way the almond market or nut market works is you have a farmer, and then you have a processor, and then you have a pasteurizer, and then you have a broker who sells the product. So there are all of these different hands in the pot. In this case, it's just Stuart and Jasper Orchards. So we work directly with them. They do everything. They grow them. They pasteurize them. They process it. They ship it right to us, and that's it. And then the same thing for pecans. We work with a smaller farm in Oklahoma. And it's just two brothers who are carrying on their father's legacy of growing pecans. And it's this really cool thing. And that's something like Ty has found that for a sugar supplier. We work with a bag manufacturer who makes them themselves, like a box manufacturer right in Victor, New York. So that's our goal, is to build all these relationships with people who are also vertically integrated. And I just think it's a great way to do business.
I do too. I love how you explained that. That's wonderful.
Thanks.
That's great. Can I talk to Ty for a second?
Absolutely. We're passing the mic over.
It's an audio podcast, so nobody realizes. I've been sitting here the whole time looking at this handsome guy. By the way, you're both too handsome to be good at business, too.
He knows how to talk to people, doesn't he?
What's your background real quick before we get to the nuts? Let's start. Where are you actually from?
Yeah, so my full name is Taiwo Adoramu. I go by Ty. Seems to be a lot easier for people to pronounce.
What was the real one again?
Taiwo.
Taiwo. Mm-hmm. That's not that bad.
I know, but like you'd be surprised.
All right.
You think Nat and Nate was bad? I could try it. And people always thought I was, when I first moved to the States, I'm originally from Nigeria. People thought before they met me, they thought I was Chinese or like Asian.
Really?
For some reason. I'm not sure why, because they see Taiwo. That's where I'm from.
How old were you here when you moved?
I moved to the U.S. when I was 14. Moved on.
Your parents moved here?
That's a long, long story. but mom moved here first. And then a few years later, 10 years later, all of my siblings, there's five of us. We all moved to the States as well.
Right to Rochester?
No. I found my way to Rochester by the way of Robert Wesleyan. That's where I met this goofy guy. but moved to Albany, Schenectady to be specific.
Okay.
So a little bit, about 3 hours from here.
All right. And then you choose to go to Roberts. And like, what are you going to be when you grow up?
That's a funny story. Yes, actually. That was my biggest aspiration. I'm a If you know one thing about me, I'm a big soccer soccer head. So I watched soccer play all my life growing up.
Where was – oh, my guy's from Cameron. When I was an exchange student in Italy, I watched a lot of Serie A.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
And Patrick Boma, I think. But he was from Cameroon, though, I think, right? Yeah. But we had a priest in my hometown, Father David, who actually just passed away before his time. He's like in his early 60s. But when he first came – to America, he played soccer, and this one I didn't look like this. I could play soccer back then, but he was from Nigeria, and he used to lead like soccer games down in Township Park in Conneaut, Ohio, and I loved playing with him. So the only Nigerian I've ever known, huge soccer.
Well, now you know another one.
Two
for two. Well, there's not much Nigerian men that you would meet that doesn't like soccer.
Of course,
put it that way. Yeah. So that's what. So but back to your question, yes, I thought I was. And I had aspirations of going pro when I was, you know, younger. Because moving to the States, this was back in 2008 or 2009, not many people, soccer was not as popular as it was now. So, like, you can be fairly good, and people are like, wow, this guy's...
Oh, yeah.
They gas me up so much, you know, compared to...
I remember that about Father David. Father David first came here, and he was just smoking all of us. Mm-hmm, and we're like... Mm-hmm. And I think to him, it was just like... Yeah, exactly.
I was average in the global scale, but when I moved to the States, because of how not popular soccer was at the time, I was like a phenom. So that also kind of, you know, played into my ego of, of course I'm going to be a soccer player when I grow up.
By the way, getting to Italy, when I went to Italy, I was so much bigger. I played basketball. In Ohio, I was a scrub for basketball. Yeah, in Italy, I was good.
Exactly.
You
could have been pro.
I was also very like physically aggressive just because I was a bigger guy. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't really European style. Mm-hmm. European style is a little bit more like
shooting
finesse. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so just the fact that I just got every rebound because they would always, they're like, this guy's willing to throw an elbow.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm so, all right. So you get to Roberts.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, is it your roommate or like, how do you meet him?
Yeah. So, do you mind if I share the, okay. So, we freshman year, we were both on the soccer team at Roberts. My first impression of Nat was we had to do a fitness test, a 5-minute fitness test. And I couldn't do it. So I was cheering on the guys on the sideline, because I was hurt. I just saw this running on the third lap. Just giant smile on his face. He probably was as big as he is now. Then just goofy guy, just running down the track with the biggest smile on the face. I'm like, I'm not gonna like that guy. And then I went back to my dorm, walked in.
He did not finish the.
Yes, he did. Yeah, exactly. But he had the biggest smile on his face. So that's his personality. Going back to my dorm, and right next door to my room was Nat. And that was the first interaction, and obviously we built a really good friendship. So much so that, like, was it your freshman year or your sophomore year that you did the speech?
I'll give him the mic so you don't.
We'll see how the people take this. but growing up in Oswego, I'll give a little backstory. There were not many black people. So Ty was literally the first black person
Ty?
I ever met. Ty is from Nigeria. Right. His skin is black. Yep. And so I gave, in an introductory to speech class, I gave a speech on my first black friends. So that was Ty and Kenny. Ty Wo and Kehinde and their cousin, Tokumbo.
That was a ballsy speech.
It sure was. Yeah. It sure was.
All right. So. All right. And are you, when he gives that speech, are you just there going like,
I wasn't in the class. He just came back from the speech class and kind of told me what happened. And how was like, I was just like,
how did that go?
Well, I told them you were not my first white friend, so you know, I'm sorry that I can't reciprocate that. But thanks for sharing that.
Yeah,
it was cool. It was really cool.
All right. Okay. So then the freaking nut starts making nuts.
Well,
so what'd you think when the guy starts making nuts out of his dorm?
The thing is, like, so we were both RAs at this time. It's junior year of college. We were both RAs, which, looking back at hindsight, 2020. But I don't know if you were the greatest examples of RAs, but so we both had singles in different opposite end of the of the building, of the floor. His room was, like you said before, the nut headquarters. So all the stuff was there. And he was just like, you know what? I don't like sleeping by myself. Do you mind if I crash with you? Sure, why not? I got a room to myself. So we were roommates, unofficially.
Wait, so hold on a second. So I think you did mention this earlier, but so your official room was the warehouse.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And then you slept in his room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the ground and just literally just underneath. And like, so much so that like we kind of build a codependency. It's just like where like he won't go to bed if I'm not in the room, or just kind of vice versa sometimes. So, like, yeah, I mean, this has been going on. Yeah. And I'm a twin as well. I have an identical twin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
so it's kind of
are meant to be. Yeah.
It's literally. Yeah. That's kind of how I look at it. Yeah.
So you're supportive. You're like, yes, crash here while.
Why not? I mean, why not? Of course. Yeah. Of course.
And then, okay, so then he goes out and he's doing farmers market. So it's immediately, it's not really a sustainable thing, right? It's just farmers markets and stuff. But you're always tight. You guys are best friends, I suppose. And so, like, as it's growing and growing and growing, eventually you're going to join the team. Like, what is that like when eventually it's like, hey, this is the nut thing is really happening and we're going to do this for real?
Yeah, this almost was very serendipitous because, like you said, from the inception of Nats Nuts, I was kind of there watching the growth of this thing. And even after graduation, like you said before, we lived together in an apartment. It was a two-bedroom apartment with like five guys. So we're quintessential, just and it's like in a business. So like a quintessential, like, right after college dorm room experience. So much so that even in the apartment, obviously we continue to make the nuts. It was like everywhere. Like, so from dorm room in college to after college, it was just like this nut thing just keeps following me around. And to what, 20, was it 2022? When we had the dino you asked me to come to join. Yeah, so 2022, when, backstory on this, I was talking to my wife before. So he texted me, he was like, hey, are you free on this day? I want to grab some breakfast. This was like a week before this happened. And I talked to my wife. I was like, I think he's going to ask me to join Nats Nuts. And I think I'm going to do it. This is even before I even know what's going to happen, before he even brought up the idea at all. But like, I just had inclination. I was like, I'm going to do it. Went to a diner in Rhino Court, had a conversation. I was like, would you like to, you know, join the Nats Nuts team? And I was like, heck yeah. Right on the spot. So that moment kind of felt, like I said before, felt serendipitous because I've watched the growth of this thing. And like you said before, I know Nat like intimately. Like, I know what kind of person he is. So like to go from working in this corporate world to like working with my friend seemed like a no-brainer for me. Yeah, so absolutely. Yeah, it made sense.
Oh, that's amazing. What is your official role there?
I'm the director of operations. So a jack of all trade. A master of none. So from manufacturing to shipping to customer relations to everything, I kind of do a little bit of everything.
You guys are a beautiful story. I mean, it really is. Well, it's just so great.
Appreciate it.
It's wonderful. Ty, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
What a cool thing. Let me talk to Nat again. Yeah, like, what a.
All right, and I real quick on the record publicly, I have to say thank you so much, Ty, for putting up with the nuts everywhere in all the different apartments we lived in. Ty and Kenny, his brother, both were so hospitable and accommodating and supportive of the business.
I'm just like picturing it in my head, but like, I just imagine for the last 10 years, you just had boxes everywhere.
Yep.
Labels, bags, just like, just like,
exactly
yeah,
that.
Like, was under the bed ever, storage at one point. Like
A corrugate. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Corrugate. That was the box.
All the dry goods. Yeah. I was like, all right, this is not food. Yeah. I can sleep above this.
Yeah. Can I ask you about, so what are we doing on time? We're doing it. Can I ask you about one more thing?
Yeah.
I know you're a religious guy.
I am.
And Roberts is a religious school, right?
Yep.
So I assume you are as well, but I won't put
Christian
you on the
school.
Spot so much about it. But I want to understand. I've had a long life of figuring it out, right?
Sure.
Grew up Catholic.
Okay.
Didn't, you know, but basically like as a kid, I'm being forced to go to church.
Yeah,
like
not really.
Sunday
your
school. I'm not into it, but I'm,
sure.
I mean, I'm there enough that I'm understanding what's going on. And, but then, you know, later in life, then I go through this phase where I'm going, I don't believe any of it, you know?
Sure.
And now I've kind of come back around to like, there has to be, like there just has to be. But I love talking to people like you because you are, you see so much good in everything. How do you deal with this? Is not what you signed up for in this podcast.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I'm an open book.
How do you deal with bad things happening to good people? This is the thing I just still have such a hard time getting wrapping my head around. But and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I've asked this question to a lot of my friends who are religious, and they've said like, it's okay to ask the question. Like, it's okay to ask. What is it? I know this just took a really weird turn.
Yeah, no, I like it. We're getting really...
But
like,
I don't get the opportunity to talk to somebody. And you know what the other thing I love about you is you're non-judgmental. You know,
of course,
like,
man.
That was one thing I felt like I saw in Catholicism.
Sure.
My mother used to say, and she was so right, there's no more judgmental people than the first four pews at the church, you know? Like, I feel like that's not your vibe. You don't have
that. Yeah, I mean that, like, I'm a Christian. So my goal as far as the way I live my life is to emulate Christ and live like Christ lived. And if you look at the way he lived, people loved him. Like, he was the kindest, gentlest, realest guy. Like, when he would correct people and he would say, hey, look, like, here's your sin. But he'd point it out in love. And he'd do that with the hope of restoring people.
He was an adult with 12 friends.
Yeah.
That's hard to do.
Right. Yeah, that's not easy.
You got to be pretty likable.
I've got a lot of close friends, but I don't have, not 12 of them.
I don't have 12.
Yeah, well, right. I probably do at this point. But, yeah, no, that's, like, that just shows, like, multiple times in the Gospels it says, and the crowds followed Jesus. Like, the reason people followed him is because he was the light of the earth. Like, he's and that's who I follow. So that's my goal, is to be light and to love people. And that doesn't mean overlooking things that they do that are wrong, but it means if someone wrongs me, or if there's sin in someone's life or my life, I want someone else to call that out. Like, that's the loving thing to do. Like, you're a dad. So, like, when Leo does something crazy that's not good for him,
of course
you don't condemn him or judge him. You say, hey, here's, oh, well, he's, maybe you don't reason with him because he's seven. Maybe.
I try.
There's a certain a level of that.
Yeah.
But you love him. And so you correct him. Yeah. And that's what Jesus is. Like, he, you know, God is our creator and Jesus is his son. So it's, you know,
I look at them, you know, I look at my kids and I go, well, God has to exist because of this. This is a miracle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a miracle that these kids are here. Has to.
Yeah.
But then back to my thing about when bad things happen to good people.
That's a great question.
That's the one where I still go, I don't get it.
That's a great question. And here's what I would answer that. I think this is a hard thing to answer. And I'm not a pastor. I've worked in, like, youth ministry and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, there are no good people. Like, we all, like, Romans 3:23 says, we all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Which, yes, some people are obviously objectively worse than others. But if you're looking at the standard of God, that's perfection. And none of us reach that perfection. Which, it's like, saying that, I'm not justifying bad things should happen to people who are kind or who live selfless lives or do these things. Like, that's not how it's supposed to be. But the reality is, we live in a broken world. Like, we don't live in heaven. And that's why bad stuff happens to good people. Like, the hope of Christianity is Jesus came to restore. And he came to bring back what was meant to be. And so the hope as a Christian is, I live in a broken world and bad things are going to happen to me no matter how good I am. Like, the business could go off in flames. I could get cancer. Like, horrible things can happen. And that's the reality of this fallen, broken world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus came to restore that.
You have the faith in the afterlife, and that's helps you through that. Is that?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my hope is, like, so my hope as a Christian is, this world is not the end. Like, the end is eternal paradise.
Yeah. Or when you sell Nats Nuts, that could also
exactly. Like, yeah, that could be the end.
That'll be pretty good. That'll be like
right.
Yeah. That'll be like paradise.
It would. I mean, in like, whether I'm rich or poor, whether I'm healthy or sick, like, at the end of the day, God gives and he takes away.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I will worship him no matter what. So thank you for asking that question. That's
absolutely.
I appreciate
beautiful.
That
beautiful. And you've experienced hardship in your life, you know, just to kind of, like, I don't know what you call it, bookend the interview with how we started. I mean, you had some tough stuff as a kid.
Yeah.
Right?
I've had,
with dad. And
I've,
like,
had my fair share.
Yeah. So, like,
really hard things.
Have you ever been shaken? I mean, how old are you?
30.
So in 30 years, like, have you ever been shaken, or are you just like, nope, this is the thing I know?
Yeah, I think my faith, like, I grew up in a Christian household, so I was taught this as a kid. But more and more I've in Christianity, you'll hear, like, making your faith your own. And I have researched this, and like, there are so many things now that I'm like, logically, this makes the most sense. Like, Jesus was a real guy who walked the earth. When you look at the account of the Gospels, like, the actual texts and the manuscripts, there's so much overlap, and it's just logically, it makes the most sense. But I always had a strong faith that this is the truth. But there have been times in my life when I knew that truth, but tried to live my own way and really cast God aside and said, I don't want to live like that. Like, I just want to live for myself.
And,
And honestly, like those at those points in my life, that's when I was either living a double life and not having integrity and feeling depressed and feeling pain. And that's like you in these what's the verse? It says, in this world you will have trials, but take heart, for I have overcome this world. And that's, I lean on that.
Beautiful.
I lean on that a lot.
Yeah. That's really good.
Thanks. Good, so I hope that answers your question well.
Where do you go to, is it called church? Or like, yep. Where do you go to church?
Yep. So my wife and I attend Grace Road, which is right in the city. there's actually another church called Grace Road that's like famous in South Korea for being a crazy cult. So that is not the church we attend.
Yeah.
Grace Road Church.
You go to the one in Rochester, not Korea.
Yes, correct. Okay, good. Yeah, we attend the one right here. And it's great. It's, you know, it's been really fun getting plugged into that church after COVID. We're both, Jazan and I are both members there. And it's fun. We have a little small group that we spend time with. And in the church too, like a lot of people will experience hardship in church and talk about church hurt. And like churches are made of broken people, but the hope is that, you know, we emulate Christ and live like him and build hopefully heaven on earth here, like until we can get there.
I'm not trying to be a comedian when I say this, but I do sometimes, and I used to do this when I was a kid sitting in church. Well, you mentioned like Jesus was a real person.
Yeah.
I picture things like the Last Supper, and I think about how the Last Supper was this profound event, but also it was a bunch of guys eating dinner.
Just eating dinner. Yep.
So like
a bunch of guys who probably smelled bad. And
there had to be some nuance of just like, oh, lamb again. Like, you know, like, can we like, get some more bread? You know, like
bitter herbs, really?
Like, yeah. Like there had to just be some little nuances of everyday life.
It's so funny.
Of just kind of like, I got to run to the bathroom. Right. Oh, they're getting ready to take the picture.
Yeah, that's something that, that is something that makes it so tangible. Though, like Jesus was a real guy. Like he was 100% God and 100% man. Like he had to go to the bathroom. Sometimes he had to rush to the bathroom.
Yeah, like, that's right.
You know, he experienced the things that we experience.
Yeah. Easier access though. You know, not as many buttons and zippers.
Right. True. Yeah. You just lift the tunic up and you're good to go.
It was pretty good. All right. Well, thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate it. What's next for Nat's Nuts?
So I guess I'll make this announcement here.
Are we about to do breaking news?
We're going to do some breaking news.
Well, let me sit up straight.
Yeah. So turn your listening ears on. Ty and I mentioned this in a couple Nut Letters. So again, subscribe to the Nut Letter, go to our website. We are going to do a smaller single serve pouch. We're releasing that in the next couple of months here.
Nice.
So we'll have our four top sellers, and like right now we have the resealable 4 ounce, which kind of is a pantry product. Like you have a couple, you seal it. But this is going to be
whole bag.
Yeah. When they come home, some people do. Yeah. And then they feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
But this way you can eat the whole bag. And
that
not feel
is
bad.
The key. If I start feeling bad about myself after that's the, okay.
Yep. So yeah, we're going to do a 1.2 ounce bag, single serving.
Did you buy the machine?
We got the machine. Yep. Yeah. It should be here. It should be on a boat right now.
Nice.
So yeah, Ty and I are really excited about that. And it's going to be a lot of work cut out for us installing that thing. And
right next to the register now, you know? Yep. Right? Impulse buys.
Yep, that convenience buy.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So that's the big announcement.
Huge. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's
fantastic. This is so fun.
Yeah, this is great. I love that you came. Thank you for visiting us at Craft Cannery. Like having you in the building. I introduced you to some people. You're a celebrity around here. People know you. They know the Nuts. It's great. It's such a good story. It's, you know, I can't wait. Like this, you're going to be on How I Built This one day, which
is
my favorite.
I love that podcast.
It's a great podcast.
It's the best.
But you get to tell the story on How I Built This one day.
This
you
feels know? Like that. So
yeah, well, right.
I don't need
to. Yeah, that'll be after you sell the business. This, yeah. All right, boys. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.